Trinadapi sunichena, tarad iva sahishnuna, amanina manadena, kirtaniya sadahari. Hare nama, hare nama, hare nama eva kevalam, kalo nastyeva, 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 gatir anyata. So we're in the end of chapter 52. Krishna the Runachor. The paragraph begins. Rukmini's marriage with Shishupal was already settled. Therefore, she suggested that Krishna kidnap her so that this might be changed. This sort of marriage, in which the girl is kidnapped by force, is known as Rakshasa, and it is practiced among Kshatriyas, or men with an administrative martial spirit. Because her marriage was already arranged to take place the next day, Rukmini suggested that Krishna come there incognito to kidnap her and then fight with Shishupal and his allies like the king of Magadha. Knowing that no one could conquer Krishna, who would certainly emerge victorious, she addressed him as Ajita, the unconquerable lord. Rukmini told Krishna not to be concerned that the fighting would take place within the palace, and that many of her family members, including other women, might thus be wounded or even killed. As the king of a country thinks of diplomatic ways to achieve his object, Rukmini, being the daughter of a king, was diplomatic in suggesting how this unnecessary and undesirable killing could be avoided. She explained that it was the custom of her family to visit the temple of Goddess Durga, their family deity, before a marriage. Prabhupada comments, the Kshatriya kings were mostly staunch Vaishnavas, worshipping Lord Vishnu in either the Radha Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan form. Still, for their material welfare, they used to worship Goddess Durga. They never made the mistake, however, of accepting the demigods as the Supreme Lord on the level of Vishnu Tattva, as do some less intelligent men. To avoid the unnecessary killing of her relatives, Rukmini suggested that it would be easiest for him to kidnap her while she was either going from the palace to the temple or else returning home. She also explained to Krishna why she was anxious to marry him, even though her marriage was to take place with Shishupal, who was also qualified, being the son of a great king. Rukmini said that she did not think anyone was greater than Krishna, not even Lord Shiva, who is known as Mahadev, the greatest of all demigods. Lord Shiva also seeks the pleasure of Lord Krishna in order to be delivered from his entanglement in the quality of ignorance within the material world. Although Lord Shiva is the greatest of all great souls, or Mahatmas, he keeps on his head the purifying water of the Ganges, which emanates from a hole in this material universe made by the toe of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva is in charge of the material quality of ignorance. And to keep himself in a transcendental position, he always meditates on Lord Vishnu or Krishna, and always tries to purify himself with the water of the Ganges. Therefore, Rukmini knew very well that obtaining the favor of Krishna was not easy, since even Lord Shiva must purify himself for this purpose. Surely it would be difficult for Rukmini, who was only the daughter of a Kshatriya king. Thus, she decided to dedicate her life to observing severe austerities and penances, such as fasting and going without bodily comforts. If this were not possible, in this lifetime, to gain Krishna's favor by these activities, she was prepared to die from such activities and undergo similar difficulties lifetime after lifetime. Prabhupada comments, in the Bhagavad Gita it is said that pure devotees of the Lord execute devotional service with great determination. As exhibited by Rukmini Devi, it is the only price for purchasing Krishna's favor. One should be strongly determined in Krishna consciousness, and that is the way to ultimate success. After relaying Rukmini Devi's statement to Krishna, the Brahman said, my dear Krishna, chief of the Yadu dynasty, I have brought this confidential message for you from Rukmini. Now it is placed before you for your consideration. After due deliberation, you may act as you please. But if you want to do something, you must do it immediately. There is not much time left for action. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 52nd chapter of Krishna entitled Krishna the Ranachor. Chapter 53. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini. After hearing Rukmini's statement, Lord Krishna was very much pleased. He immediately shook hands with the Brahman and said, my dear Brahman, I am very glad to hear that Rukmini is eager to marry me, since I am also eager to get her hand. My mind is always absorbed in thoughts of the daughter of Bhishmaka, and sometimes I cannot sleep at night because I am thinking of her. I can understand that the marriage of Rukmini with Shishupal has been arranged by her elder brother in a spirit of animosity toward me. So, I am determined to give a good lesson to all of these princes. Just as one extracts and uses fire after manipulating ordinary wood, after dealing with these demoniac princes, I shall bring forth Rukmini like fire from their midst. Krishna, upon being informed of the specific date of Rukmini's marriage, was anxious to leave immediately. He asked his driver, Daruka, to harness the horses for his chariot and prepare to go to the kingdom of Vidarbha. After hearing this order, the driver brought Krishna's four special horses. The names and descriptions of these horses are mentioned in the Padma Purana. The first one, Shaivya, was greenish. The second, Sugriva, was grayish like ice. The third, Megapushpa, was the color of a new cloud. And the last, Balahaka, was of ashen color. When the horses were yoked and the chariot was ready to go, Krishna helped the Brahmin up and gave him a seat by his side. Immediately they started from Dwaraka and within one night arrived at the province of Vidarbha. The kingdom of Dwaraka is situated in the western part of India, and Vidarbha is situated in the northern part. They are separated by a distance of not less than 1,000 miles. But the horses were so fast that they reached their destination, a town called Kundina, within one night, or at most 12 hours. King Bhishmadka was not enthusiastic about handing his daughter over to Shishupal, but he was obliged to accept the marriage settlement due to his affectionate attachment for his eldest son, who had negotiated it. As a matter of duty, the king was decorating the city for the marriage ceremony and acting in great earnestness to make it very successful. Water was sprinkled all over the streets, and the city was cleansed very nicely. Since India is situated in the tropical zone, the atmosphere is always dry. Dust always accumulates on the streets and roads, so they must be sprinkled with water at least once a day, and in big cities like Calcutta, twice a day. The roads of Kundina were arrayed with colored flags and festoons, and gates were constructed at particular crossings. The whole city was decorated very nicely. The beauty of the city was enhanced by the inhabitants, both men and women, who were dressed in fresh washed clothes and decorated with sandalwood pulp, pearl necklaces, and flower garlands. Incense burned everywhere, and fragrances like aguru scented the air. Priests and Brahmins were sumptuously fed, and, according to ritualistic ceremony, they were given sufficient wealth and cows in charity. In this way, they were engaged in chanting Vedic hymns. The king's daughter, Rukmini, was exquisitely beautiful. She was very clean and had beautiful teeth. The auspicious sacred thread was tied on her wrist. She was given various types of jewelry to wear and long silken cloth to cover the upper and lower parts of her body. Learned priests gave her protection by chanting mantras from the Samaveda, Rigveda, and Yajurveda. Then they chanted mantras from the Atharvaveda and offered oblations in the fire to pacify the influence of different stars. King Bhishmaka was experienced in dealing with Brahmins and priests when such ceremonies were held. He specifically honored the Brahmins by giving them large quantities of gold and silver, grain mixed with molasses, and cows decorated with cloth and ornaments. Damaghosh, Shishupal's father, executed all kinds of ritualistic performances to invoke good fortune for his son. Shishupal's father was known as Damaghosh due to his superior ability to cut down unregulated citizens. Dama means curving down, and Ghosh means famous. So he was famous for controlling the citizens. Damaghosh thought that if Krishna came to disturb the marriage ceremony, he would certainly cut him down with his military power. Therefore, after performing the various auspicious ceremonies, Damaghosh gathered his military divisions. He took many elephants garlanded with golden necklaces and many similar decorated chariots and horses. It appeared that Damaghosh, along with his son and other companions, was going to Kundina not exactly to get Shishupal married, but mainly to fight. When King Bhishmaka learned that Damaghosh and his party were arriving, he left the city to receive them. Outside the city gate were many gardens where guests were welcome to stay. In the Vedic system of marriage, the bride's father receives the large party of the bridegroom and accommodates them in a suitable place for 2 or 3 days until the marriage ceremony is performed. The party, led by Damaghosh, contained thousands of men, among whom the prominent kings and personalities were Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Vidurata, and Poundraka. It was an open secret that Rukmini was meant to be married to Krishna, but that her elder brother Rukmi had arranged her marriage to Shishupal. There was also some whispering about a rumor that Rukmini had sent a messenger to Krishna. Therefore, the soldiers suspected that Krishna might cause a disturbance by attempting to kidnap Rukmini. Even though they were not without fear, they were all prepared to give Krishna a good fight to prevent the girl from being taken away. Sri Balaram received the news that Krishna had left for Kundina accompanied only by a Brahmin, and that Shishupal was there with a large number of soldiers. Balaram suspected that they would attack Krishna, and thus, out of great affection for his brother, he took strong military divisions of chariots, infantry, horses, and elephants, and went to the precincts of Kundina. Meanwhile, inside the palace, Rukmini was expecting Krishna to arrive. But when neither he nor the Brahmin who took her message appeared, she was full of anxiety, and she began to think how unfortunate she was. "There is only one night between today and my marriage day, and still neither the Brahmin nor Shyamasundara has returned. I cannot ascertain any reason for this." Having little hope, she thought that perhaps Krishna had found reason to become dissatisfied and had rejected her fair proposal. As a result, the Brahmin might have been disappointed and not come back. Although she was thinking of various causes for the delay, she expected them both at any moment. Rukmini further thought that demigods such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Goddess Durga might have been displeased. It is generally said that demigods become angry when not properly worshipped. For instance, when Indra found that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were not worshipping him because Krishna stopped the Indra Yajna, Indra became angry and wanted to chastise them. Thus Rukmini thought that since she did not worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma very much, they might have become angry and tried to frustrate her plan. Similarly, she thought that Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, might have taken the side of her husband. Lord Shiva is known as Rudra, and his wife is known as Rudrani. Rudrani and Rudra refer to those who are accustomed to putting others in distress to cry forever. Rukmini was thinking of Goddess Durga as Girija, the daughter of the Himalayan mountains. The Himalayan mountains are very cold and hard, and she thought of Goddess Durga as hard-hearted and cold. In her anxiety to see Krishna, Rukmini, who was after all still a child, thought this way about the different demigods. The gopis worshipped Goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband. Similarly, Rukmini was thinking of the various types of demigods, not for material benefit, but in respect to Krishna. Praying to the demigods to achieve the favor of Krishna is not irregular, and Rukmini was fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. Even though she pacified herself by thinking that the time for Govinda to arrive had not yet expired, Rukmini felt that she was hoping against hope. Not expressing her mind to anyone, she simply shed tears, unobserved by others, and when her tears became more forceful, she closed her eyes in helplessness. While Rukmini was in such deep thought, auspicious symptoms appeared in different parts of her body. Trembling began to occur in her left eyelid, arm, and thigh. When trembling occurs in these parts of the body, it is an auspicious sign indicating that something lucrative can be expected. Just then, Rukmini, full of anxiety, saw the Brahmin messenger. Krishna, being the supersoul of all living beings, could understand Rukmini's anxiety. Therefore, he sent the Brahmin inside the palace, to let her know that he had arrived. When Rukmini saw the Brahmin, she could understand the auspicious trembling of her body, and immediately she became elated. She smiled and inquired whether Krishna had already come. The Brahmin replied that the son of the Yadu dynasty, Sri Krishna, had indeed arrived. He further encouraged her by saying that Krishna had promised to carry her away without fail. Rukmini was so elated by the Brahmin's message that she wanted to give him in charity everything she possessed. However, finding nothing suitable for presentation, she simply offered him her respectful obeisances. The significance of offering respectful obeisances to a superior is that one offering obeisances is obliged to the respected person. In other words, Rukmini implied that she would remain ever grateful to the Brahmin. Anyone who gets the favor of the goddess of fortune, as did this Brahmin, is without a doubt always happy in material opulence. When King Bhishmaka heard that Krishna and Balaram had come, he invited them to see the marriage ceremony of his daughter. Immediately, he arranged to receive them, along with their soldiers, in a suitable garden house. As was the Vedic custom, the king offered Krishna and Balaram honey and fresh washed garments. He was hospitable not only to Krishna, Balaram, and kings such as Jarasandha, but also to many other kings and princes according to their personal strength, age, and material possessions. Out of curiosity and eagerness, the people of Kundina assembled before Krishna and Balaram to drink the nectar of their beauty. With tearful eyes, they offered Krishna and Balaram their silent respects. They were very much pleased, considering Lord Krishna the suitable match for Rukmini. They were so eager to unite Krishna and Rukmini that they prayed to the personality of Godhead. Our dear Lord, if we have performed any pious activities with which you are satisfied, kindly be merciful upon us and accept the hand of Rukmini. It appears that Rukmini was a very popular princess, and all the citizens, out of intense love for her, prayed for her best fortune. In the meantime, Rukmini, being very nicely dressed and protected by bodyguards, came out of the palace to visit the temple of Ambika, goddess Durga. Deity worship in the temple has been in existence since the beginning of Veda culture. There is a class of men described in the Bhagavad Gita as Veda Vada Rata. They believe only in the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but not in temple worship. Such foolish people may here take note that although this marriage of Krishna and Rukmini took place more than 5,000 years ago, there were arrangements for temple worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Yanti Deva Brata Devan. The worshippers of the demigods attain the abodes of the demigods. There were many people who worshipped the demigods and many who directly worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The system of demigod worship was directed mainly to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Ganesh, the sun god, and goddess Durga. Lord Shiva and goddess Durga were worshipped even by the royal families. Other minor demigods were worshipped by silly, lower-class people. As far as the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are concerned, they simply worship Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, the worship of demigods is condemned but not forbidden. There it is clearly stated that less intelligent men worship the demigods for material benefit. On the other hand, even though Rukmini was the goddess of fortune, she went to the temple of goddess Durga because the family deity was worshipped there. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that as Rukmini proceeded toward the temple of goddess Durga, within her heart she always thought of the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, when Rukmini went to the temple, it was not with the intention of an ordinary person who goes to beg for material benefits. Her only goal was Krishna. As Rukmini proceeded toward the temple, she was silent and grave. Her mother and her girlfriends were by her side, and the wife of a Brahmin was in the center. Surrounding her were royal bodyguards. This custom of a would-be bride's going to the temple of a demigod is still practiced in India. As the procession continued, various musical sounds were heard. Conch shells, drums such as panavas, and bugles of different sizes, such as tuyas and bairis, combined to make a sound which was not only auspicious, but very sweet to hear. Thousands of wives of respectable Brahmins were present, all dressed very nicely with suitable ornaments. They presented Rukmini with flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and a variety of colorful garments to assist her in worshipping Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga. Some of these ladies were very old and knew perfectly well how to chant prayers to Goddess Durga and Lord Shiva. So, followed by Rukmini and others, they led these prayers before the deity. Rukmini offered her prayers to the deity by saying, "My dear Goddess Durga, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, as to well as your children." Goddess Durga has four famous children, two daughters, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and the goddess of learning, Sarasvati, and two sons, Lord Ganesha and Lord Kartikeya. They are all considered demigods and goddesses. Since Goddess Durga is always worshipped with her famous children, Rukmini specifically offered her respectful obeisances to the deity in that way. However, her prayers were special. Ordinary people pray to Goddess Durga for material wealth, fame, profit, strength, and so on. Rukmini, however, desired to have Krishna for her husband, and therefore prayed that the deity be pleased with her and bless her with that benediction. Since she desired only Krishna, her worship of the demigods is not condemned. While Rukmini was praying, she presented a variety of items before the deity, chief of which were water, different kinds of flames, incense, garments, garlands, and various foods prepared with ghee, such as puris and kachoris. She also offered fruits, sugarcane, betel nuts, and spices. With great devotion, Rukmini offered them to the deity according to the regulative principles directed by the old Brahmin ladies. After this ritualistic ceremony, the ladies offered the remnants of the food to Rukmini as prasad, which she accepted with great respect. Then Rukmini offered her obeisances to the ladies and to Goddess Durga. After the business of deity worship was finished, Rukmini caught hold of the hand of one of her girlfriends in her own hand, which was decorated with a jeweled ring, and left the temple in the company of others. All the princes and visitors who came to Kundina for the marriage had assembled outside the temple to see Rukmini. The princes were especially eager to see her because they all actually thought that they would have Rukmini as their wife. Struck with wonder upon seeing Rukmini, they thought she was especially manufactured by the Creator to bewilder all the great chivalrous princes. Her body was well constructed, the middle portion being thin. Her high hips were adorned with a jeweled locket. She had pink lips, and the beauty of her face was enhanced by her slightly scattered hair and by different kinds of earrings. The bodily luster and beauty of Rukmini appeared as if painted by an artist, perfectly presenting beauty following the descriptions of great poets. Rukmini's breasts are described as being somewhat high, indicating that she was just a youth, not more than 13 or 14 years old. Her beauty was specifically intended to attract the attention of Krishna. Although the princes gazed upon her beautiful features, she was not at all proud. Her eyes moved restlessly, and when she smiled very simply, like an innocent girl, her teeth appeared just like jasmine buds. Expecting Krishna to take her away at any moment, she proceeded slowly toward her home. Her legs moved just like a full-grown swan, and her ankle bells tinkled mildly. The chivalrous princes assembled there were so overwhelmed by Rukmini's beauty that they became almost unconscious and fell from their horses and elephants. Full of lust, they hopelessly desired Rukmini's hand, comparing their own beauty to hers. Srimati Rukmini, however, was not interested in any of them. In her heart, she was simply expecting Krishna to come and carry her away. As she was adjusting the ornaments on a finger of her left hand, She happened to look upon the princes and suddenly saw that Krishna was present amongst them. Although Rukmini had never before seen Krishna, she was always thinking of him. Thus, she had no difficulty in recognizing him amongst the princely order. Krishna, unconcerned with the other princes, immediately took the opportunity to place Rukmini on his chariot, marked by a flag bearing an image of Garuda. He then proceeded slowly, without fear, taking Rukmini away exactly as a lion takes a deer from the midst of the jackals. Meanwhile, Balaram appeared on the scene with the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty. Jarasandha, who had many times experienced defeat by Krishna, roared, "How is this? Krishna is taking away Rukmini from us without opposition? What is the use of our being chivalrous fighters with arrows? My dear princes, just look. We are losing our reputation. Krishna is just like a jackal taking booty from a lion." Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 53rd chapter of Krishna, entitled Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini. I am going to continue with chapter 54. Krishna defeats all the princes and takes Rukmini home to Dwaraka. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chapter 54. Krishna defeats all the princes and takes Rukmini home to Dwaraka. Jarasandha and all the other princes were very angry at Krishna for having kidnapped Rukmini. Struck by Rukmini's beauty, they had fallen from the backs of their horses and elephants, but now they began to stand up and properly arm themselves. Picking up their bows and arrows, they began to chase Krishna on their chariots, horses, and elephants. To check their progress, the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty turned and faced them. Thus, terrible fighting began between the two belligerent groups. The princes opposing Krishna, who were led by Jarasandha, and who were all expert in fighting, shot their arrows at the Yadu soldiers, just as a cloud splashes the face of a mountain with torrents of rain. Gathered on the face of a mountain, a cloud does not move very much, and therefore the force of rain is much more severe on a mountain than anywhere else. The opposing princes were determined to defeat Krishna and recapture Rukmini from his custody, and they fought with him as severely as possible. Rukmini, seated by the side of Krishna, saw arrows raining from the opposing party onto the faces of the Yadu soldiers. In a fearful attitude, she looked upon Krishna's face, expressing her gratefulness that he had taken such a great risk for her sake only. her eyes moving, she appeared sorry. And Krishna, who could immediately understand her mind, encouraged her with these words, "My dear Rukmini, don't worry. Please rest assured that the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty will kill all the opposing soldiers without delay." As Krishna was speaking with Rukmini, the commanders of the Yadu dynasty soldiers, headed by Lord Balaram, who was also known as Sankarsana, as well as by the name Gada, not tolerating the defiant attitude of the opposing soldiers, began to strike their horses, elephants, and chariots with arrows. As the fighting progressed, the princes and soldiers of the enemy began to fall from their horses, elephants, and chariots. Within a short time, millions of severed heads, decorated with helmets and earrings, had fallen on the battlefield. The soldiers' hands were severed, along with their bows and arrows and clubs. Arms were piled upon arms, thighs upon thighs, and horses upon horses. Similarly, other animals, such as camels, elephants, and asses, as well as infantry soldiers, all fell with severed heads. When the enemy, headed by Jarasandha, found that they were gradually being defeated by the soldiers of Krishna, they thought it unwise to risk losing their armies in the battle for the sake of Shishupal. Shishupal himself should have fought to rescue Rukmini from the hands of Krishna. But when the soldiers saw that Shishupal was not competent to fight with Krishna, they decided not to lose their armies unnecessarily. Therefore, they ceased fighting and dispersed. Some of the princes, as a matter of etiquette, appeared before Shishupal. They saw that Shishupal was discouraged, like one who has lost his wife. His face appeared dried up. He had lost all his energy, and all the luster of his body had disappeared. They then addressed Shishupal. "Our dear Shishupal, don't be discouraged in this way. You belong to the royal order and are the chief amongst the fighters. There is no question of distress or happiness for a person like you, because neither of these conditions is everlasting. Take courage. Don't be disappointed by this temporary reversal. After all, we are not the final actors. As puppets dance in the hands of a magician, we are all dancing by the will of the Supreme, and according to his plan alone, we suffer distress or enjoy happiness. We should therefore be equipoised in all circumstances." Although in the beginning, the princes had been full of hope for success in their heroic action, after their defeat, they could only try to encourage Shishupal with flattering words. Thus, Shishupal, instead of marrying Rukmini, had to be satisfied with the flattering words of his friends, and returned home in disappointment. The kings who had come to assist him, also disappointed, then returned to their respective kingdoms.